I don't remember which of those form or which of those things it was on, but there was somebody who was closed in or was in supported employment making $0 is what it looked like. And I don't know what that means.
Now, I don't have that report in front of me.
I'm trying to remember. In the last year, Barbara?
Yeah.
Let me think. There was one person that was closed, as identified as supported employment, who was unsuccessful. You know? In the sense that he was not working. You know, the person really kind of had a lot of work adjustment problems and really wasn't committed to making the job work. And so, and wasn't really interested in finding another job when the job fell through. So that job, that position was closed, and there was no income at the time of closure. I'm trying to remember, there was another individual who was making less than minimum wage with the prospect that eventually the wage would increase to the point. The follow-up was by BDS services, and there was no need for continued financial support on our part. But that person was making money. Let me see, there were a total of 5 closures all year.
In supported employment.
Right, and I'm kind of going through each one now. And it seems to me like the only one that wasn't making any money was the one that was closed unsuccessful.
Okay, I just was confused because I'm not, you know, supported employment is something that's kind of, you know, new to my
right. Basically, thinking. When a person is identified as supported employment, that simply means that the money is coming out of Title VI. Okay, and there's a number of qualifiers that need to happen before that money can be used. Otherwise, if a person is not identified as supported employment with an IPE, Title I money is going to be used. So, okay?
Okay.
Another thing I did want to mention on the independent living tracking information, we figured out, because Bob recognized from looking at the numbers that our report is not correct. The independent living tracking shows our total of people that we worked with in independent living as 523, and in fact there are 668 in the older blind program. And so we've found out there was kind of some internal missing of people in the computer system that we were using. So we're working on that.
And in fact, there's, the IL program of all ages, the true figure is closer to 800. It's 700 and something, but closer to 800.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions on statistics? Okay. Staff updates, I'll talk about next. It does seem like both yesterday and forever since our last meeting. Larry Roos is now the Lincoln District Rehabilitation Counselor. He had been hired for the North Platte position, but while he was still in training, the Lincoln position opened, and he liked us so much in Lincoln, he decided he wanted to stay there, so he applied for that and did get that post, leaving the North Platte position open, and we have not yet filled that, because right about then is when the governor was really stressing that we needed to find ways to not spend money. So that was one way. Jeff Altman is back in the orientation center teaching cane travel mobility, returned with a master's degree in orientation and mobility from Louisiana. Excuse me. We have a new communications instructor in the orientation center. Sahar Husseini has joined us. And Jane Lansaw, who was filling in for Jeff in his absence, has now become the orientation counselor in Omaha. And James Juarez, as the transition counselor, has completed his training and is in his position now in Omaha. We've already talked about the governor's employee and supervisor of the year for the commission, Jonathan Ross and Nancy Fleurl, and we're very proud of them and the work that they do. I also would like to mention Jan Ludwig and the accomplishments she's made in finally getting phone exemptions for our blind staff in their offices. Now, one would think that that, the phone for calling information, the 411 exemption, you would think that would be a no-brainer. However, she has worked for a couple of years trying to convince communications that this is something that should occur. Even to the point, they even said to her at one point, well, the other staff will run into those offices to make their... And we all have time for that. So.
I hate it when that happens.
Oh, gosh. Get off the phone, Bob. I want to call 411. Anyway, so she kept at it. She was, you know, she persevered, and it really was a hassle, but she got it, and that's going to save us $200 to $300 a year. It's just crazy that something like that would be so hard. But
so is this with the phone company or with the state?
It was a little bit of both, wasn't it?
It started with communications.
The state
had to convince them. And then from there, Alltel. And that took some time.
No. That's getting to be a dirty word.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's terrible.
Now, which entity said the thing about people going in?
Yeah, that's good.
I think that was communications.
Really?
Oh, dear.
Their opinion of state employees.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
So
looked at my
lazy to use, look at the phone book. They run across the hall.
All right. So anyway, we really appreciate that. And, of course, I mean, there's a million things that everybody's doing that... I'll talk about cost savings in the budget later, but lots of things on all fronts that people are doing. A couple of events I want to tell you about coming up. December 4th and 5th, I'll be in Kansas City at a regional state directors meeting. And then that same week, the 5th, 6th, and 7th, Carlos will be in Kansas City for a field supervisors meeting. And those are with the other... commission or not, or the other voc rehab agencies, both blind and general or combined in this region. And then the vendors committee is meeting Friday afternoon, December 7th. That will be in Lincoln. And it's either at 1 or 1:30. And I believe it's in our offices. So if anybody wants to attend that. I would like for us to think about what we're going to do for training for new commissioners. We'll certainly have one new commissioner sometime soon. I hope that Dorothy remains with us, and so we would just have one. But in any case, for the future, I thought that as people came in, you know, if you want us to do some kind of a 1 or 2 day, depending where they're from, I suppose, kind of training that would include some time with me, Carlos, Bob, some time in the training center, rather than, I like what you've done with having the focused sessions at each meeting, but that does take a long time before you, I mean, your whole term can be up before you'd find out about the different things, and so it's something I've been thinking about and wondered if you had any guidance on that.
Well, I mean, I guess assuming how what they know or don't know, I guess you got to assume they don't know anything, and you know, probably coming down to the center and would certainly be the first step. I mean, the to see what you know, what the training is all about, because if they don't have a lot of familiarity with that, then I think that would be very useful to even, I guess, a majority of us have to be blind, but since we're all blind now, we could get, they could be sighted, so even, you know, if we wanted to put the sleep shades on them and you know, just have a little you know, kind of like when you give tours of the orientation center.
Mm-hmm. We don't normally do Sleep Shade Experience for a tour.
No.
It's a rare situation. One of the problems with that, if short-term sleep shades, generally the lesson that is learned is, oh God, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And so it takes a while to learn the skills and...
Yeah, I guess I've kind of blended two ideas together.
Right.
The tour of the,
right.
the
that
training
I
center.
I sure agree with. I think that would be great.
Well, one thing we talked about, I think we talked about at some point or another, is, you know, since we have been recording our meetings, we could have people listen to the focus sessions, although we'd have to be careful about that because things change so quickly.
Right.
That might not be, you know,
That's a thought, though.
If we could make sure that we could try to keep those current in some way.
Well, certainly, like the statistical handouts and the rules and those kinds of things would be something that a person could go through.
Maybe any materials from the past year, including minutes and the statistics and stuff that we could provide.
Like they did in SRC, they used to. Give a packet out with all copies of the minutes and so forth.
We should come up with some kind of packet. That would be good.
Well, we've had the different components given us a overview each session that probably just break down what the each of the components are and. And then, maybe even since they're recorded, the portions that where they gave their presentation.
I just talked about that, yeah. But we said that we would need to be sure that we updated anything that that needed to be.
Well, I was meaning just that particular part of the recording rather than the whole.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant.
Okay.
But. You know, even some of those things.
We'd be aware if there were major changes.
Yeah.
Most of what's going to be in those is not going to change too much. So I think that would work. Okay. Well, and I guess I wondered with regard to new members if we need to initiate. From within the commission, or Barbara, if you're going to contact the governor's office to make sure that a new appointment has been made. I'm sure with the whole budget thing, that office is, probably not high on their list is appointments. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, I can certainly find out where they are on that.
Okay. It seems to me more appropriate from your chair than from mine, but if you want us to do something, you could let us know. It'd be helpful if we knew, well, as soon as an appointment is made, then we can know and try to get material to them. We can start kind of putting together what will be in a packet.
Do we even know how many people have applied or anything?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know either.
And those were due December 1st, wasn't it?
I believe that's right.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
I have had requests for two forms.
And some people will have contacted the governor's office directly.
Mm-hmm. I've given out some forms.
Okay.
So there are applicants up there.
Yeah, there are. Okay. Next, I'll talk a little bit about the budget. You know that we survived the budget cutting ordeal, and very grateful for that, appreciative of the consumers who made it known to the powers that be why that shouldn't be, and of course we gave testimony as well. So they did hear us, and we got past that hurdle. We still do not have a federal budget, and some of the terminology that we use a lot this time of year are grant award notices, or GANs, which we get whenever they parcel out some funds to us, and continuing resolutions, which is what Congress does when they have not done a budget yet. They do a little continuing resolution and give us so much money to last whatever period of time. It's best if they do it in, I mean, even a month is better than nothing. The last one we received was November 6th, and it was for just under $25,000. And remember, this is the 80% portion of our budget. So they really are nickeling and diming us. It's pretty difficult to carry on business with that kind of a budget. But, you know, hopefully we'll get that soon. We did receive then also $20,000 for the older blind grant. So again, that's just a portion, but that's $20,000. We did receive the full transition grant and the full in-service training grant, because those are separate from the regular rehab budget. We have not received any funds for supported employment or Part B. That's from the feds. That's 80% of our budget.
Now, which is the Part B?
Part B is independent living, and actually our full amount of Part B is only about
$35,000. $33,000 to be exact.
$33,778 or some such.
$33,329.
Okay, thank you. So that's not very much money.
Well, but that Part B is what we use to provide services to people under 55. Okay.
Who are independent living.
Who are independent living, right? Or who don't have an IPE.
Right. Okay. Now, assuming that we will one day have our actual budget from the feds, we've looked at where our expenditures are with regard to, or what our budget we're anticipating for this next year will be with regard to expenditures that we made last year. And at this point, we're about $90,000 short of the needs to really spend at the level we did last year. Now, the cost-saving restraints that people are implementing or have implemented has helped a great deal. And I think you know that the State Rehab Council has decided that it would be fine if they did not exist. That would save $4,204. At least that's what we spent on that council last year. There have been years when it's been more like $6,000 and $7,000. But we've been really pretty tight with the funds for that this year, and even so it was a little over $4,000. Other cost or savings that we've done, I mentioned the business of not hiring the North Platte position yet, and some other things. Staff have really cut down in the number of overnights that they're doing, so the lodging cost is less. Other things that we're trying to do, we really tried to come up with cost savings that were statewide, you know, something, not just everything in Scotts Bluff or everything in Omaha, but things that would impact different parts of our system geographically, also different parts of our system of, you know, staff versus things for clients, for example, requiring that clients get used books for their schooling if used books are available. We've never done that before, and that can save some funds. The news lines, cutting that, the number of lines in half. And so far I haven't heard that there have been any problems with that. Somebody donated $400 because we needed a vacuum in the for the center apartments, and they generously said, well, we can do that, because we were saying it's hard to justify putting out money right now. So, you know, there just are lots of things at all levels and at all places that people are doing.
And all those things together still leaves the 90,000?
Right.
And that even eliminating the SRC?
Right. And of course, we're looking at ways to build the budget, and we're really trying to be very consistent about being able to provide services throughout the year and not have a part of the year where we're short and we tell people try to hold off on things. But if there's a plan, you know, use the same kinds of considerations no matter what time of the year it is. And by looking more, we're definitely going to look more heavily into comparable benefits. The law requires us to do that, and we have, but we've really never done it in a systematic way. We have not had training. We have not had any kind of a tool to use to so people could think of what all comparable benefits would be out there. And so that's something that Carlos and Bob are working on developing.
Okay, what are you talking about, comparable benefits?
Okay, yes, thank you for the question. Health insurance, if there are programs, a community-based program or some kind of entity, that's what they're there for.
Pell Grant is one of the examples.
Right, the Pell Grant, are you familiar with that? Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then this other financial aid that we talked about.
Right, that would be another real thing that would work. So, and that's an ongoing effort. I mean, we'd like to think that as we build our funds through the years and build our funding base so that we're not just depending on what the government gives us, both combined, this federal and the state funds, you know, the needs are much larger, and especially with technology and the growth of technology, it's really quite huge what we could be spending, you know, and so.
Is there a line item on the budget? I mean, is it broken out to what is spent, you know, like for technology and equipment and?
Mm-hmm. Let's see if I now. For this past year, okay, that's operating. In rehab technology, last year, $157,341. Now, I'm thinking this chart is just the basic support. No, it includes the federal and the state, but it doesn't include, say, bills that we've paid from the Social Security Reimbursement Fund or other parts of our budget. But at least it gives you an idea, and that's...
So it'd be higher than that.
Right. And then also there would be some, like in the line item of diagnostic and evaluation, the amount there is $5,600. And some of that probably is technology. I don't have it broken down that much here.
Does that include the transition grant?
No. And the transition grant, I'm working with a font 3 here. So, transition grant last year, rehab technology was just under $60,000.
Yeah.
And older blind grant was just under $29,000. Supported.
Although a lot of that, I think, are like closed circuit TVs and that sort of thing.
Right. And then let me. See, there's if there's any other there's a thing called miscellaneous case services that's about $12,000 that could possibly have had some pieces in there that's technology. And college training, $141,000 roughly, and so on.
Do we require college students to apply for Pell Grants?
Yes, we require them to apply for Pell Grants. We have not required them to go through the whole process of financial aid application with their school.
Why not?
Well, why not? I'm not sure I can answer that. I'd rather answer why we should change. You know, in a sense, our legacy is one of really not wanting to have policy written, trying to avoid being one of those bureaucracies where every, you know, you can't even breathe without checking which procedures manual it comes from. And I agree with that to a point, but I also think that there's some real value in having some consistency and some for counselors to understand what it is they should be doing across the board, and for consumers to know what to expect when they come in the door. Mm-hmm. So that's part of rule that we'll get into that discussion a little later.
Now that college training number, mm-hmm. I mean, what does that all consist of then?
I would think that is tuition and fees and books. Would that be true?
Yes.
Would it include books or just tuition?
Would include books.
Okay. What about reader services? Would that be in college training or?
College training, yes.
4921.
Would that include any equipment?
No, equipment is separate.
Okay.
College training, what are you talking about?
The code 4921.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay. There's a separate code for textbooks, okay? 4921 is tuition and fees. And then 4924 is textbooks. And there's actually textbooks for universities and textbooks for community college. There's a line item for tuition and fees for universities and another one for tuition and fees from community colleges.
Any other questions on budget?
Do we know how many applications for Social Security reimbursement we have in the pipeline?
Carlos?
We applied for 5. We got 1 recently. And the other 4 we haven't yet. We checked last week. Why not? Because we sent all of them together. And they didn't realize they haven't reviewed them yet. So what they did is they took a look at and they saw our applications. And they thought we were not in the list that we're supposed to be, meaning that we are 100% perfect, supposedly, which translates into that they are supposed to review those applications right away and tell us an answer right away, which they didn't. So they told us why we sent you that first reimbursement when we were not supposed to get it, when it's the opposite. We were supposed to get all the 5, not just 1. So they realized their mistake and they're going to work on reviewing the other 4.
And have we actually received the money for the one that was approved?
I don't know. I
we have
the approval, but
right. I
usually
haven't
it takes 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So what kind of money are we talking about if all the other 4 were? Do you know going in how much money
we know
you're eligible for reimbursement?
We know what we claim, and what we claim is everything that we spend through a third-party kind of purchase for the person, and then there's a formula by which we determine the value of our services, mm-hmm. and so then we, you know, have a proportion there. And so we put a claim for X amount. Sometimes they allow the entire claim and sometimes they allow a bit less. Like if it's a $20,000 claim, it's not unusual for us to get $17,000 or $18,000. Usually the ones we've seen have not been off by very much, and Carlos and Dottie Wilmot have really done a great job of increasing, just being very good about what we claim for is almost always allowable, and mm-hmm. so that's, we've really had an increase there.
So do we have an idea what those other 4 would add up to? This ballpark?
Don't quote me, but I believe it's close to 160,000 altogether.
You know, I think now that I think about it, Bill's been using the term 150 as what we're expecting in Social Security reimbursement.
Okay. So that's already factored in, or is that?
No.
So that could take care of the 90, right?
Yes,
there.
That will help, you know, take care of a good part of that. But remember that that is, even that is given these enhanced spending constraints. You know, if the information I have given you is if we continue with the same kind of spending levels that we had this past year, and really for 6 months, well, maybe not six, maybe 4 months, people have really been working at not cutting back on client services, but finding ways to be more economical in everything we do. So, you know, we will maintain if we keep up those habits. Now, I think there's a feeling among staff and maybe among consumers who, but I do think staff kind of have the feeling that, well, it'll go back to normal as soon as we, you know, we got our state budget, okay, that's great, and then as soon as Congress gets its act together, things will go back to normal. Well, that is not true.
Right. So the 90,000 shortfall right now is with all these budgetary constraints implemented.
Yes.
So if we get 150 from Social Security, then it would allow picking up some of these services that we've been holding off on and cutting back on, the potential to do that anyway.
The potential. That's roughly, it's not exactly what I would say, but that's pretty close.
The 90 is I mean, that's cutting back as far as we want to cut back, and so at least the 150
will
pick up that, and then
right.
Any surplus
right.
Can be probably swallowed up in a second in many different ways.
And of course, the other thing to remember is we also have a fair amount of bills. Let's see, where's that figure? That we have about $50,000 worth of really last year's bills that we're going to be liquidating in the next couple of weeks. So we're still kind of picking up the pieces from this cash flow problem.
So the 50,000 is not so. Actually, we have 90 shortfall from this year, and then a 50,000 that we've carried for from last year.
Right. Okay. That captures more of the picture.
Okay.
But as I said, I mean, staff really are doing a good job of, and we need to not say cutting back services. I mean, we're trying very hard that that's not what we do. You know, we're looking at what we do differently. And and I guess I should also mention in terms of PSL, the salaries and benefits, the staff will, it is worked into the state budget and the contract that there is a 2.5% increase for staff in January. That's the step increase. And then a 1.5% in July when that process is implemented. And that's for contract covered staff. Usually we have discretion about rules covered, the management positions, and almost always, you know, unless there's some real reason not to, we try to have the rules people get the same increases in January and July as the other folks do. So that's worked into the budget. Okay, I switch gears unless anything else on that. Okay. In going through the law, the state statute under which we operate, we really went through it with fine-tooth combs in developing the rule. A couple of things that I wanted to address. One is Section 718613 requires that we file an annual report with the governor and the clerk of the legislature prior to each regular session. And that report is to detail the activities and expenditures of the commission and to include separate information about the activities and expenditures of the vending facilities and anticipated revenues that will be available from all sources. And so I thought that's something we should notice and maybe decide who should do that report, and you know, whether we would, you know, the board chair and we staff people would work together to put something together. In the past, the Rehab Council has done a joint report, so it's been the Rehab Council chair together with the director providing this report to the governor, but this is a little different as a commission. And I honestly don't recall if we did that last year, but...
Well, yeah, the Rehab Council chair and you did do it last year. I remember seeing it.
Right, we did that, yeah, but we didn't do this. I don't think we did this more specific details with expenditures and vending.
I don't think so. Now, and so the Rehab Council, since it's talking about being on its way out, has not determined to do the thing that it has done in the past.
Well, we didn't discuss it at the last meeting, and not that it necessarily is always in a meeting that it's discussed, except after the fact, but Bill, did you have any thoughts about that, about the Rehab Council? And then I can read the language in here if you want me to. But the Rehab Council report is different. Did you want to say anything, Bill?
No, I haven't even got any thoughts.
Okay. Now the law reads, the commission shall file an annual report with the governor and the clerk of the legislature prior to each session, detailing what I just read. So that is different from the Rehab Council's report.
Yeah, it is.
So we somehow need to work that into things.
How long is that report from the Rehab Council? How
Oh, it's usually maybe 3 pages. It's really,
yeah, it was a really short thing.
Narrative. These are the highlights. It hasn't been anything big.
And not much budget.
No, almost no budget issues.
No.
And nothing regarding the vending facility, yeah, unless there was something special that year. The legislative session starts when? Does anybody know the date?
The first Wednesday in January is usually the... And that would be the second, I would say. So the first is...
A Tuesday.
Okay. So we'll need to be working on that. And maybe what we should do is, unless you want to do that report, is we'll come up with something and run it past you all. And
that makes sense to me because, you know, we don't really have, you know, expertise in that the people who deal with it every day do.
So how about we develop it, we email it to you all, and... And incorporate anything you want us to add or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The other part of, or the other section of the law that has a requirement now that's different is that 718609. Get the correct wording here. The commission shall maintain a list of all ophthalmologists and optometrists currently licensed in Nebraska and establish procedures for obtaining evidence to verify eligibility. That second half we do, but we've never had a list, and we certainly have never had, well, we've had a list in the past, but We certainly have not kept it current. Bob's been doing some research on that and has determined that there are lists that we could purchase of ophthalmologists and optometrists, but, you know, again, the issue would be keeping it current. And having a list that's in a folder in my office or your office isn't going to help the consumer out in Broken Bow very much. So anyway, he's done some more research to see what we could do there. There is the Nebraska Optometric Association has a website that has, you can search for optometrists.
The program is called Find a Doctor.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can enter, you can identify which part of the state you live in, or you could also search by the name of the doctor. So it seems to us that it makes sense for optometrists that if we can work out having a link on our website
that
to
like
that.
To me. Mm-hmm.
And then as far as ophthalmologists, did you get any reply back yet on that one?
We're still playing phone tag. I've established contact at least through voicemail, and so, you know, it seems like we're just missing each other. I'm trying to connect with this program called the Health Professional Tracking Center, which is part of the University of Nebraska, Omaha. And I understand that they do have a website also, at least that's what I'm told. From the information I do have, that this may be a way we can put that information, connect with that information too. So, but I'm still working on that.
Isn't there some licensing body in the state that you,
Our
association has a
yeah, and that's
partner.
Where you kind of started.
Yeah, the medical association.
I think that's the information that the Health Professional Tracking Center is tapping into, you know. And as far as the state licenses optometrists, their listing, their information is $21 you know, for however form you want it. You can get it electronic. You can get it electronically. It's still $21. But you know, the Nebraska Optometric Association at least has free access to their website. So otherwise, if you want to get a listing from them, it's $100.
And it's not that cost, either the $21 or $100, is exorbitant. It's just that the minute you get it, it seems to me it's going to be out of date anyway. So
mm-hmm. We need to tap into something that keeps itself
right
updated, mm-hmm. and that's legitimate and that's seen as a viable.
Right.
And what's the rationale for us needing to?
It's in the law. I don't know why it was written in the law. That's, for the most part, I think the law is excellent and covers all the bases, but there's one or two bases that it doesn't, I could see that probably wouldn't have needed to be in there as a requirement. It might have been worded differently, but it's in there, so unless you want to change that part of the law. And I think it's reasonable for us. I mean, we've done this research now, or will have soon, which we hadn't done before. So, you know, that's a good thing. And certainly when people ask us about ophthalmologists, which they do, we don't say, you know, go to Joe and avoid Bill. But we could do a better job of knowing what's available for people. And if people don't have access to the internet, that's where we would come in then, and we would go online and check for them, you know, and provide them with whatever information. So I'm not saying we would just tell people you have to go to the internet. Mm-hmm. So anyway, those are things we're working on. And then I thought I would, the last thing I want to talk about is the annual monitoring review. And now, last May, our representative from Kansas City, who is now Jerry Harris, came and spent some days with us asking questions and looking at files and looking at what we do. Barbara, did you get that electronically yet?
Yes, and I sent it to everybody, supposedly.
Oh,
but then again,
I did not get that from you. Unless it was in the, yes, third A. Well, I had my internet on until about 6:30 last night.
We're going to have to dock your wages.
That's right.
Shape up here.
Go right ahead.
Well, would you try that one again, please? Because then I want to share that with Bob and Carlos electronically. I just want to mention, in most of the areas, there were no recommendations for things we needed to do or change. There were two areas with a recommendation. One is with regard to memorandums of understanding with the Workforce Investment Board.